Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
As I prepare this podcast for broadcast the day before Thanksgiving, I find my optimism surprises even me. Being thankful for the ongoing influx of transport dogs and cats isn't something that heads the list of many people who treat these animals with behavioral or medical problems. Still, even at their worst, and sometimes at their worst, I can't help but admire these animals and be thankful for all they've taught me. But what is it about these animals that earns my gratitude and respect? A combination of genetic diversity and an equally rich array of environmentally triggered epigenetic effects makes resilience one of their most noteworthy attributes. No matter how much the rescue system may want to paint these animals as victims, I've yet to encounter one who didn't impress me as a tough survivor. Think about it. The mere fact that any animal, let alone a young one, can survive the physical, mental, and emotional trauma of a capture and transport system that would unhinge an animal from strong companion animal roots is a testament to the transport's resilience. Add the megacultural shock that must occur when these animals finally alight in alien, human-centered environments hundreds to thousand miles away, and their ability to cope becomes even more praiseworthy. Imagine treating young children from equally traumatic backgrounds the same way. Would anyone automatically assume that these kids were capable of coping with a new environment and its incomparable language or dialect, cultural and stimulus load? Would anyone urge adoptive parents to take these kids to shopping malls and introduce them to as many people and animals as fast as possible to socialize them? Not unless they wanted to be accused of child abuse. The transport animal's ability to subordinate emotion-driven responses also signals an inherent intelligence worthy of admiration. In addition to making sense of a physical environment, none of which may make any sense to them, they also must use their canine and feline behavioral databases to make sense of human behaviors. But even more than that, they must possess the intelligence to grasp that many human behaviors make no sense when so judged. Instead, the animals must figure out what those behaviors mean to us. Whereas their owners and other people may judge these animals' behaviors emotionally, these animals are skilled four-legged ethologists. They know how to evaluate behaviors based on the context in which the behavior occurs. I marvel at the ability of transports from sparsely populated woodlands, deserts, islands, and large U.S. and foreign metropolitan areas to work their way through all this. I also admire the energy efficiency and the elegance of the behavioral displays it triggers in some of them. A good example of this is how quickly some of these animals can sag from treat or punishment responsive obedience to learn laziness. That is, treat or no treat, they only obey a command if it makes sense to them. Maddening though this may be for owners, it makes sense in an animal genetically and epigenetically predisposed to survive in a harsh physical or mental environment. One of my favorites was an adolescent dog described as food motivated. Only she wasn't really. She was merely food motivated when it suited her purposes to obey a command. If it didn't, all bets were off. Even more fascinating, this dog knew the kinds of things that would cause her owner to give her a command followed by a treat. After observing the two of them for a while, I still couldn't decide if the dog was aware of when the sequence would begin before the owner or at the same time. The dog was that good at reading her owner's body language. In this split second, though, the dog didn't orient toward the owner. She glanced at the hand in which the owner carried the treat. Then she glanced back at the potential trigger of the human forbidden behavior. In this situation, it was the presence of an animal in the yard who might warrant an alarm bark. As I surreptitiously observed the dog, I swear I could see her mentally running a cost-benefit analysis. Should I obey a command not to bark and get a treat, or bark? Final score, treat 0, bark 1. Admittedly, lots of treat-trained animals from strong pet dog backgrounds display learned laziness as they get older. It was the young age of the dog displaying this behavior that impressed me. And something else about these dogs. During my behavioral bond consultations, I routinely allow my canine patients to roam my consultation room off-lead, and at will. Observing transports teaches me a lot about how they relate to their owners, me, and other unknown people, and all the novel features that the room and a busy veterinary practice and its surroundings offer. My only request of owners is that they relax and calmly ignore their animals. As you might expect, some folks are better at doing this than others. Most transport dogs figure out what the owner's relaxed behavior communicates very quickly. In a typical case, the dog may bark at activities going on in the waiting room, but when the owners calmly ignore the dog self-extinguishes the behavior. Unlike many dogs from companion dog breeding who always had their basic needs fulfilled, who then will badger their owners in an attempt to get their owners, and sometimes even me, to react, even at a young age, transports display little of this attention-seeking behavior. And they self-extinguish what little they do faster than their companion counterparts. Given these animals' predisposition to conserve energy, pestering their owners, like the barking that gets no response, simply isn't worth the energy. Paradoxically, though, I'm impressed by the determination some transports with strong free-roaming heritage exhibit when it comes to resisting confinement. When they want to get out, they can muster a seemingly unlimited amount of energy, as well as strength, cunning, and flexibility that would leave a contortionist in awe. No fence is too high. No door latches or windows too daunting. Holes that seem so tiny a mouse couldn't squeeze through them, some transports see as potential gateways to freedom. Each failure results in the development of more escapist skills and more determination to succeed. For some of these animals, acceptance of confinement is not an option. I'm thankful for the opportunity to see such animals firsthand, as well as the different kinds of behavioral and bond problems they and their owners encounter. I'm thankful for the lessons they teach me about what works and what doesn't work for them. Last but most certainly not least, I'm thankful for the committed owners willing to trade in their rescuer's ID for a more knowledge-based one. This enables them to address their transport animal's needs more objectively, ease the animal's transition from a familiar to an unfamiliar environment, and soften the effects of any trauma experienced during the capture and transport process. And a final note, as Thanksgiving looms on the horizon, I'm thankful for the predictability that my own animals with their strong companion roots and known history give my life, so I can better serve my clients and their sometimes challenging transport animals going through difficult times.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.